Test, test, test.
Yep, good job.
Oh, cute movie.
Cute, huh?
Test, test, test.
Welcome to the Litflix podcast, episode 12. We are books, movies, booze. So we read a book, watch a movie, have some drinks, and talk about it. Our episodes are explicit and they do contain spoilers. I'm Casey.
I'm Abby.
And tonight's episode is A Simple Favor by Darcy Bell, along with the 2018 movie. Tonight, I am drinking a martini.
Ooh, good for you.
Yeah, what are you having?
You know, I was really lazy. I'm having vodka soda.
Nice.
Yeah.
In the book, they just drink white wine, but in the movie, they drink Aviation Gin Martinis, which is Ryan Reynolds' company, distilled in Portland, Oregon.
That's amazing. My boss just let me have a shot of that this afternoon.
Oh, lovely.
Had never heard of it. It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't even think I'm a big gin fan, and yeah, it was real good.
I might have to get some.
You don't have to mix it with anything. It goes down so smooth and it doesn't, there's like no gross aftertaste and it's just, it's really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I left work basically drunk today. So that was fun.
That's lovely. Did you get any work done?
I think I did better.
Oh, okay.
That's how a lot of people are. Yeah, it's true. It's like how people are better drivers when they're drunk.
You can't say that. That is not true. Abby does not stand behind that statement.
Well, there was this girl in my biological psychology class in college, and she asked the teacher, we were studying alcohol impairment, and she literally asked the teacher, are you sure? Because I could swear I'm a better driver after I drink. And I'm like, what the hell? Go back to high school, please.
Right? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, she was an idiot.
Do you want to hear a great story about just how life is?
Yeah.
Okay, you've already heard. You've
your
already
sad,
heard this,
horrible life?
You've already heard this, but I wanted to tell it on here.
Do it.
Okay, so my daughter just turned 3 and we're still potty training and stuff. So the other day, you text me and you're like, oh my gosh, I got a promotion. And in my head, I'm thinking, good for fucking you. Because right at that moment, I had just helped wipe my daughter and I had poop under my fingernail. And I thought, well, this is life. Sometimes you're high, sometimes you've got shit on your hand.
And honestly, what a better illustration between working moms and stay-at-home moms.
Oh my God, it's like the most underappreciated thing I've ever done in my life.
And how did you get that clean?
I scrubbed with multiple brushes and like 3 different soaps, and it was a while. Like, I have fake nails, and so I felt like it was permeated into it.
Are you ever gonna feel clean again?
I'm good now, but
you can't eat with that hand ever again, though.
It's been a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's just part of parenthood. You have shit on yourself multiple times.
You're always gonna have some kind of bodily fluid.
But it was like the perfect moment for you to be like, hey, look at my great, glorious career life. And I'm totally happy for you. It's just in that moment I wanted to hit you with a pan or something.
It's such an amazing juxtaposition. And it was hilarious when you told me. It was so funny.
Oh, my God. That was a day.
That's like such perfect timing.
I mean, for you, it really was.
You can't like write that.
No, you really can't. And that should be on every sitcom in the future.
It really should. Oh, Casey's shit nails.
It was bad. It was real bad.
Has anything like that ever made you cry?
Not since she was like a baby.
Okay.
You know, like those first few weeks when everything is just like overwhelming and your hormones are crashing into the abyss.
Oh my God, it was horrible.
Yeah, I cried a lot then. But normally I'm like cool and fine with it. And Like, it happens. It's life.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for you. You're doing great.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It was just that perfect moment that, like, summed up life for me.
It was awesome. And I gotta be honest, it's such a good, like, anecdote that I'm glad it happened.
Have you told other people?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay.
It was your story to tell.
Okay, well, it's been told now.
That's awesome.
And I will release this shit story into the world.
It's perfect.
This is literally the story of Emily and Stephanie. Our life.
Well,
I'm kidding.
I was going to say, I hope not. Because I'm not a psychopath, I don't think. And you're not a psychopath either.
No, I don't want to move in on your life either.
God, single white female, man.
Okay, so are you ready to hear about our author?
Miss Darcy Bell? Yes,
yeah, I am. Yeah, which is crazy because there's barely any information online about her. All I could find was basically is what's on the back of the book. It says, Darcy Bell was born in 1981 and raised on a dairy farm in western Iowa. She's a preschool teacher in Chicago. A Simple Favor is her first novel, published in March 2017.
Does she not look like a discount Zooey Deschanel?
That's totally what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Darcy Bell is a pen name.
Maybe. This is her only book out, too. I don't know if she's got anything else in the works.
But it would make sense, since she's a preschool teacher, to want to keep her life on the DL.
Yeah. I could also see Zooey Deschanel being a preschool teacher. So.
Oh, totally.
And growing up on a farm in western Iowa.
Right.
Okay, so 20th Century Fox preemptively acquired the film rights for the novel in January of 2016. And in June 2017, Paul Feig, F-E-I-G, signed on to direct the film adaptation. The director has also directed things like Bridesmaids, Spy, episodes of The Office, the recent Ghostbusters.
Yes, I knew his name. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't figure out why. Bridesmaids is one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's a great one.
It's, oh, you're really doing it. Oh, you're shitting in the street.
I love that.
Oh, that is fresh. It's so quotable.
In this, like, he's got a thing for Melissa McCarthy. Ghostbusters, Bridesmaids, Spy, and Heat are all with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jessica Scharzer?
Maybe we should figure out how this is done before we do it.
Maybe. Do you want me to spell it?
No, because it sounds like Okay. Shart, so no thank you.
Okay, Scharzer, Shaza, no. she wrote the screenplay. She also wrote Speak. And oh. 8 episodes of American Horror Story.
Are you serious?
Yes, I love this team together.
Me
this
too.
Movie. Yeah. Good in team. The movie, it also stars Anna Kendrick as Stephanie, Blake Lively as Emily, and Henry Golding as Sean. And in case you don't know who he is from Crazy Rich Asians. What's the plot of this book?
Okay. It starts with a simple favor, an ordinary kindness mothers do for one another. When glamorous Emily asks Stephanie to pick up her son after school, Stephanie happily says yes. Emily has a life that would make any woman jealous. She's the perfect mother with a dazzling career working for a famous fashion designer in Manhattan. Stephanie, a widow with a son in kindergarten, lonely in their Connecticut suburb, turns to her daily blog for connection and validation. Stephanie imagines Emily to be her new confidant and is shocked when Emily suddenly disappears without a trace, leaving her son and husband with no warning. Stephanie knows something is terribly wrong. Unable to keep away from the grieving family, she soon finds herself entangled with Sean, Emily's handsome, reticent British husband. But she can't ignore the nagging feeling that he's not being honest with her about Emily's disappearance. Is Stephanie imagining things? How well did she really know her quote-unquote best friend? Stephanie begins to see that something, not friendship, love, or even an ordinary favor, is as simple as it seems.
That sounds very intriguing.
Yeah.
I don't know how intriguing it is. I feel like the story's been done before.
There's a lot of comparisons to Gone Girl.
And the girl on the train.
Okay.
I don't know that it's...
It's like a light version of those.
Yeah. So, in the book, Stephanie is having or had sex with her brother, and I seem to be surrounded by brother fuckers lately. I'm rewatching Game of Thrones. Oh. We just wrapped up The Other Boleyn Girl, and now this.
There's a lot of similarities to The Other Boleyn Girl in this, actually.
Stop having sex with your brother.
It's a little weird, yeah.
I don't know if anyone cares about this. I actually looked up incest laws because Stephanie is like crazy about it.
Oh.
About keeping it a secret. And I couldn't figure out why. Because I was like, do people care? Like, he's dead. Is it really that big of a deal?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say it is.
Okay, but he's dead.
You mean, okay. Why does she care? Like, why doesn't she just tell everyone she meets?
No, not that. But, like, they already know. So why are you trying
to... Who does?
Like, Emily and Sean.
Oh.
And she keeps trying to downplay it.
Okay.
I felt like.
Did you happen to look up any statistics on how often this actually happens?
No. However, there is a couple right now, I want to say in Utah, that's fighting for the right to be able to marry. And I believe they're first cousins. That's a big difference. I didn't know. So when I looked this up, there are different degrees of incest, all the way from 100%. And usually it's frowned upon anything above like 25% or above, but like third cousins or something are 12%.
Mm.
So what's interesting here is that Rhode Island has repealed its criminal incest statute and only criminalizes incestuous marriage. Ohio targets only parental figures, and New Jersey does not apply any penalties when both parties are 12 years of age or older.
12?
Yeah. The most severe penalties for incest are in Massachusetts, Virginia, Texas, and Oregon, which punishes incest with up to 20 years. Georgia, where the penalty for incest is 30 years. Wisconsin, 40 years. And in Nevada, Montana, Idaho, Michigan, you could face life imprisonment.
What?
Some murderers don't even face that.
Right? So all the people that are in there for incest and weed.
Yes.
God.
It goes on. The other thing I found, it says in many states also apply incest laws to non-blood relations, including step-parents, step-siblings, in-laws, and people related through adoption.
So Woody Allen would be totally screwed.
Yeah. So he should be facing some criminal charges.
This is gross.
Okay.
Are you like super heaved out by it?
I mean, yeah, but I'm trying to get around my feelings. Like, I know it's part of the story, and I feel like if you're going to hold this, you have to hold Game of Thrones to the same one. Like, to the same...
Standard?
Skeeve factor.
Oh, skeeve factor.
So...
I think because Game of Thrones is so far removed from our time period, though, I think people might give it a little bit more room. Plus, we like Jaime Lannister now.
In case anyone doesn't know here... Emily sleeps with her half-brother, Chris, and they did not grow up together. Like, she didn't even know he existed. But what added to, like, the ick factor for me is he looks identical to her dad.
That grossed me out, too.
And she's like, yeah, I thought my dad was hot. No, you didn't.
That's not normal.
That is not okay. So one of the major themes throughout the book is guilt. And I was wondering if you thought that the guilt Stephanie feels from all of her previous indiscretions makes her trust people more, or is it just her desperation? Like, it kind of boggles my mind the amount of times Emily betrays her and she still trusts everything she says.
I think yes.
To which part?
To the first part. So my thought on Stephanie was that she has kind of this, like, how did I want to say that? Because that was kind of a point I had about her. Why am I blanking all of a sudden?
Hold, I don't know. Please.
What was the question?
So my question is, do you think the guilt Stephanie feels from like her whole life, all of her past, like the sex, the deaths, do you think that makes her trust people more, like she's kind of blinded? Or do you think she's just so desperate for friends that she's willing to overlook many things?
I think it's the second one. So I do agree that she has this horrible guilt that she feels while still being completely drawn to totally inappropriate relationships. Like, obviously her brother. Obviously she was attracted to her dad, Sean. And then her relationship with Emily is not normal either. But I think that she feels so bad about everything in her past that she has to do everything she can to prove that she is a worthy person. Okay. And that's why she sticks with Emily.
Some things I noticed, like Stephanie seems pretty self-aware and she says things like, maybe I need that thrill of the forbidden, the taboo, and maybe loss unhinges me. Maybe grief sets loose some demon that would otherwise stay hidden inside. And if that's the case, maybe you should work on yourself or like see a therapist for this.
That's interesting because one of the themes I really noticed was addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So Stephanie, just like that quote that you just said, she recognizes in herself this draw to these relationships that are completely not appropriate. She, when she talks to Sean, talks about Sean, she says that she has this addictive feeling toward him.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like with her, especially in the movie, she's very controlling of like her household.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like super in charge and mom of the year, that kind of thing. So I feel like that comes through there too.
Like, I felt like it really pointed out the difference between how people actually are and the face we present the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this both with Stephanie and Emily. For example, Stephanie has her blog in the movie. It's a vlog. And she's constantly saying things like, to be honest. And she's really anything but honest. And she puts on, this perfect mom persona. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, you see it with, like, the other parents kind of judging her, where under the surface, she's a wreck.
I loved those two or three, that group of really bitchy parents in the classroom with the guy from Girls. They were amazing.
It's fantastic.
They were so funny. And we didn't have those in the book.
Yeah, we did not.
Yeah. And it kind of goes back to that. There's always, with all of the characters, there's all these kinks that kind of, or addictions that simmer under the surface.
Yeah, because even Sean's addicted to Emily.
And work. Yeah, and they're all trying to, like, repress these things and stuff them down and keep them from showing. Or with Sean and Emily, he, like, flaunts that, kind of. But she, Emily says, oh, there's a part in the book where Emily references that song, The House of the Rising Sun, by mm-hmm. the Animals, and that version of the song is about a gambler. And okay. The line she quotes is, and God, I know I'm one. And it's referencing like the person that's always chasing that high. And one of the reasons that she does the insurance scam is because she's so bored and wants to get away from all the boredom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge motivator for all of them. They're all trying to get away from this like mundane kind of life.
The suburbs kind of life.
Even though they all chose to live there. It's so fucking stupid. It's like, if you didn't want to
stay there.
Yeah. And also it's stupid because Emily's like, oh, well, the couple million will get us through for a while. And this is the only option I have. I'm like, bitch, well, maybe if you lived in a smaller house, you'd be fine.
In the movie,
they're almost bankrupt.
Are almost bankrupt. They're really struggling. In the book, they are not. She really is just chasing that high.
Yeah, exactly. Which leads me to another topic, psychopathy.
Ooh.
I felt like I looked up the traits of a psychopath, and so I'm going to be like armchair diagnose.
Okay.
I think Emily is totally a psychopath. They are uncaring. They have shallow emotions. They're irresponsible. They have insincere speech, which is a big one for Emily. Overconfidence. Narrowing of attention, which I didn't really understand. Selfishness. Violence. Inability to plan the future in a realistic way.
So faking your own death is unrealistic?
I'd say so.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's not my hard and fast plan for my future. So,
I mean, I was about to up my life insurance, so I didn't know. Thanks for helping me out.
You're welcome. And she was even worse in the movie. Like, she was a clear villain in the movie. Whereas I felt like there were points maybe in the book we could have rooted for her a little bit. Am I wrong? I have a question for you. Let's go back to the beginning, because here's my question. When you started reading this book, what was the tone of the book for you? Like, was it serious? Was it funny? What was it?
It's dark.
Thank you. Okay, I went into this book getting like a super heavy, dark vibe from page one.
And the movie is so funny.
The movie's hilarious. But here's what happened. When I was reading the book, I was in like a really heavy place, but I couldn't take any of it seriously, and I honestly didn't give a shit about any of the characters.
They're all awful people.
Like, in a book, even if you, like, aren't supposed to, isn't there usually somebody you can root for, even if it's a villain? Like, there's got to be some likable trait in a book somewhere, right?
Yeah, I definitely felt in this book there is not a single redeeming character, and that did make it a little bit hard. I think for me, I watched this movie before I read the book. Like, I watched it probably a couple months ago.
Okay.
And that's what I was expecting going into this book.
Something fun.
And that is not what I got.
No.
And in the movie, Blake Lively makes this character, and she's fantastic. And
she's amazing.
Like, I wasn't, I mean, I kind of root for her a little. Like, she's the greatest villain.
The chemistry between her and Anna Kendrick in the movie is just
incredible.
Fantastic. And Anna Kendrick is, or Stephanie in the movie, is so much more likable. Like, even if you don't like her at first, she's still fun to watch.
Right.
Like, they did the perfect mix of funny and edgy.
Dark.
Yeah. Like, it was great. The other question I have for you is, did you feel like any of the characters in the book actually developed in any kind of way?
No, and that's an interesting thing, because for each book, I'm trying to look at, like, the character arc, and there is none.
Right? Okay, I'm glad I'm not insane, because I was like,
I couldn't find one. I read it purposely looking for character development, and there was none.
There wasn't, no.
Like, the only development I saw was people getting worse. At one point, Stephanie helps Emily cover up a murder.
After being victimized by her.
After being victimized. And then they set up Sean. It's like, this was reverse development.
I've got reverse development. Literally, there was nothing. So, I don't know if there has to be.
I guess there doesn't have to be. I just felt like nobody grew or changed. Everybody, like, backslid. They became worse people.
That, and they felt like caricatures. Like, they didn't at any point feel like real people. I feel like if you're going to go dark and you're going to set something in a modern time.
Like Gone Girl.
I haven't read Gone Girl.
Okay.
But sure. I just, if you're going to.
The girl on the train?
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Okay.
Otherwise, you need to take it in that direction of having some humor.
Yeah, this book was really dark for me.
I didn't laugh a single time. It wasn't funny.
Neither did I.
Okay. Whereas in the movie, I think we just said that it struck an amazing balance between hilarious and
the amount of
dark.
Times Blake Lively shouts brother fucker, I wanted to...
It's pretty great.
So funny.
There was a part where Stephanie is talking to, I think it's Sean or somebody, is talking about, oh my God. She's talking to somebody about having had someone killed, and she says, you had her rubbed out. It was amazing. And then cesarean salad.
I totally missed that.
Yeah. Instead of Caesar salad, it was incredible.
Oh, I remember that now.
And they switched her last name to Smothers, which was really funny.
That was funny.
I liked that a lot. The Dennis Nylon insults were great.
Yeah.
That was one thing in the book where I did laugh, because they say that Emily works for Dennis Nylon, and I, for some reason, thought it was like a nylon manufacturing company. And I was like, that is not a glamorous job. That sounds horrible.
No, and she's super glamorous. Even in the book, I think it's cool that she presents herself as this like beautifully poised, elegant, fun career mom. But in like on the inside, she's so dark and twisted.
Yeah.
Like to the point that not even her husband knows who she is.
Yeah, and it was all intentional, right?
Yeah, in the book, she seemed pretty flat and single-minded to me.
Mm-hmm.
Something I did want to talk about was like the theme of friendship throughout this book.
Okay.
And this movie. Emily says at one point that her and Stephanie have a gift for friendship, and I seriously worry about her. For Stephanie, Emily acquires Stephanie. She's their quote-unquote fish.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it's a very one-sided friendship. And the other thing, not in the movie, but in the book, Sean never liked Stephanie.
That's true.
And she's until all he's banging in. Her. He still doesn't like her. He talks about, it's something to do. She can take care of me and my family.
Oh, yeah.
But he never likes her. And the second Emily comes back, he's over it.
That's true.
Another point after the shit hits the fan with Emily, Stephanie says, our friendship would never be the same. There would always be that little hiccup now, that edge of discomfort. We could thank Sean for that. Like, excuse me, what? This is a little hiccup? You faked your death and you fucked her husband. Like,
yeah, everything there's a lot of points where she's like really hyperbolic, and then other points where but it's inappropriate. And other points where she like downplays this stuff that's totally out of hand.
Yes.
it's ridiculous.
It's not a hiccup.
They don't really have touch with reality.
It's so confusing to me that like Stephanie was such a confusing character in the book for me. I don't even know what to make of her.
Yeah, like
she's so desperate for people to like her that she molds herself into whatever she thinks they want her to be. We see it with Emily, and we especially see it with Sean. She watches shows she doesn't like Breaking Bad. She's a vegetarian, and when she gets together with him, she starts eating meat again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure some people are like that. I didn't understand her as a character.
Me either. She's like a blank space. The other thing I hated was her blog entries.
Yes. Like, I loved the vlog entries on the movie.
Yeah, the vlog was great on the movie because it was funny.
Mm-hmm.
But like the whole hi moms thing, my friend is missing, I've got cookies baking. That doesn't. Like, I know this all illustrates her character, but it's so off-putting that I don't want to be part of it.
Right.
The other thing is that she's always talking about, you can't do this to moms, or moms will beat you at this, or whatever. And I'm like, you know, you're totally downplaying out an entire section of society just because they don't have children.
Right.
You're not an cool asshole. Fuck you.
She really is. She's out of control. And
that's a great way to describe everyone in the book. Out of control.
They really are. I listened to the podcast Best Forevers, and I would love for her to do this book. they have a book. She has a book club with one of her friends. And I think they should do this.
I love that podcast. I just listened to the episode about workplace relationships today, or workplace friendships. Oh. That was a really good one. And then another one I'm in the middle of right now is called, what is it called? It's really interesting. It's Parasocial Relationships.
Oh, I love that one.
It is so interesting. I'm like, oh my God, I'm normal for being a fangirl. That's awesome.
I love that episode. I just recently listened to her one about annoying people and how she compares annoyances to allergens.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
And I'm a person who gets annoyed a lot, so this was a great episode for me to listen to. And she tells this story of some girl broke up with one of her students because she didn't like the way he breathed. And I remember yelling at my husband because he was breathing too loud. And I was like so annoyed by it. And now I'm like, he's breathing. So
honestly, though, my husband was chewing, and whenever he chews in bed, he leans his head against the headboard and it moves and it makes my teeth bang together, and it just makes me want to kill myself. So I appreciate that she talks about that.
I feel like I'm more mindful of things now. I feel like she's making me a better person.
She is. And it's so smart and informative. I love it. It's a really good show.
Everyone should check out her episode. And I'm going to play a promo for her show at the end of our episode because it really is amazing.
Check it out.
Best forever.
Oh, and she calls her patrons friends with benefits.
I love it.
It's so great.
Do you have more stuff? I was going to point out some major differences, and then I have some questions for you.
I was just going to say, one thing about the movie that I really loved was the costuming.
Mm-hmm.
And it was
Blake Lively in those outfits. Even Anna Kendrick's character, like the development she goes through with her clothes, I love. Blake Lively in that white suit at the cemetery. Oh my God.
She's a badass, but did you ever get the feeling that she kind of looked like the Monopoly man?
Maybe, but
how I took it. But yeah,
that white suit.
If anybody can make that white suit look good, it's her.
White suit.
The costuming was really over the top and fun, and it went with the movie really well, and it highlighted the character's traits really well. The other thing that really set an amazing tone for the movie was the music. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about French music. All of the music is French, but it's a very good mix of fun and sexy. And so I really loved that about it.
The other thing I really liked about this movie is how brightly shot it was. Like, it felt nothing was dark and twisty. Everything's like super bright and out in the open, which I liked.
I read a review online too of that it was like it was supposed to be like a callback to film noir, but like neo-noir, I think is what it's called.
I don't know what that is.
It's like new noir.
Okay.
But I think neo-noir is brighter, has a brighter color palette.
I really liked it. I just feel like so many of these kind of thriller movies, they're so dark and people are slinking around in the shadows. And that definitely was not this movie. One of the first things I noticed in the book, they are 41.
They are?
Yep. She says they both had their kids in their very late 30s. They're 41 years old.
Oh, they're older than I thought.
They're a lot older than what we get in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Some other major differences between the book and the movie. In the book, Emily specifically picks Stephanie to care for Nikki. She's her and Sean's fish. Sean is a banker in the book, and actually he's good at his job. And in the film, he's a failing writer.
Oh, yeah. And a professor.
Yes.
Banging his TA.
Yes, he is. The nude painting thing doesn't exist in the book.
That's right. That was the only change I didn't like.
Another big change for me is that Emily's twin never blackmails her, and Emily doesn't actually kill her in the book.
She doesn't kill her, but she manipulates her.
She lets her die. She like encourages it, but yes. She does not drown her.
And do you feel like she did have some remorse about the death? Maybe not remorse, but sadness.
In the book?
Yeah.
100%. She was sad.
Yeah, okay.
And she blamed Sean for it. Like, I think that was her workaround.
Yeah.
The other thing, Sean is in on the whole thing from the jump. He knew this was going to happen, and she's angry at him because she said, no matter what happens, don't believe that I'm dead. And then the DNA comes back, and he starts sleeping with Stephanie, and then Emily's pissed.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing about their age that I underlined and made me really mad?
Yeah.
Because Sean is such a douchebag in the book. So this is Sean's chapter, and it's towards the end of the book, and he's talking about Emily. And he says, she'd always been the thrill-seeking type, always needing to play the bad girl. I said this was not a quality that was going to wear well as Emily aged. Fuck you.
Right?
God, that pisses me off. Anyway, sorry. That's just a note I had about her age and
how all of these people annoy me.
Shitty he was.
Let's see. Another big thing is Emily kills the insurance investigator and gets Stephanie in on it. And she also sets up Stephanie and Sean for the murder.
Yeah, if you're not Emily in the book, you did not come out of this well.
After they kill the guy, Stephanie says, it was so horrible that it was almost fun. I once heard someone talk about the second kind of fun, something so terrible that it's fun. I never want to have this kind of fun.
I can't even think of what that actually is. It's just that it just goes back to that addictive thrill seeking, trying to get out of boredom. I've never
once heard someone say the second kind of fun.
I think that's why they are all psychopaths.
Is this a real thing? Do I just live in a bubblegum world?
I don't think so. Or maybe we're just too rooted in reality, because Sean also does say in the book something about Stephanie. This is what I get for trusting a woman who has no thoughts, only feelings. That's why I think they're psychopaths, because they're so bored with their lives and discontented that they have to go to these extremes to get any kind of a rush.
Like going along with a murder.
Yeah, because Stephanie needs that approval so badly, and Emily just needs her help so that she can go live in Barbados with her $2 million.
Yes.
Or wherever the fuck she was going to go, Spain or somewhere.
It's so ridiculous. And $2 million, that's not that much now. In the movie, they made it $4 million.
I liked that change.
So another thing, Emily gets away with all of it and with Nikki at the end.
Sends
the cops Stephanie's way, because she really does set up Stephanie and Sean.
And then what happens to Miles at that point?
I don't know. I'm hoping the cops will be smart enough to...
Did you see that, like, thing she did with the names for Miles and her husband?
Yes, Miles Davis.
Really annoying. I didn't like it.
I highlighted it, and I thought, Abby's going to lose her shit over this.
I was annoyed.
I bet you were.
And then she made sure to, like, put the names together in a sentence at some point, just in case you missed it.
Part I highlighted, because even at first I was like, did she mean Nikki? And I was like, nope, she did this on purpose.
Yeah.
So my final difference is Emily does not get hit by a car driven by the amazing Andrew Rannells, and it's one of my absolute favorite moments of the movie when he hits her with that Prius, silent but deadly.
And I got so excited because I drive a Prius. And
I bet you did. Like, you're like, I could hit somebody.
Good. I actually worry about that. I worry that a pedestrian won't know that I'm there and I'll go into the crosswalk too fast.
I love that episode with the Prius on The Office, when Andy is driving and pushes Dwight into the bushes. And they're like, can't they hear him? And he's like, nope, the Prius is silent under 5 miles an hour. It's just so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It is great how he shows up at the end. He just, anything he's in, he just brings this amazing levity and realness too.
Yeah, he really does. I felt like he just brought so much life to it as well.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Those were my major differences. Did I miss anything?
No. Other than the Emily or fucking whatever her name is. Stephanie. Stephanie was a lot more likable in the movie and a lot more like a real person towards the end.
Yeah. How do you feel about her starting the PI business at the end?
I thought it was fun.
Okay.
Here's the thing about this movie. It is not a serious movie. It's supposed
not
to be
at
fun.
All. It's hilarious.
It's fun with an edge. The other thing is, despite the fact that I liked it so much, I don't know if I would ever watch it again.
I've watched it twice.
Like in your life.
Yeah. Like yeah. Once I watched it just because it was fun and the other time I watched it for this. But I actually really do enjoy it. I even liked it a little bit more the second time.
Yeah. I'm really glad that it was what it was and not followed the book.
When you text me that you weren't into the book, I'm like, watch the movie.
I'm really glad because, yeah. But like Bridesmaids, I can watch probably every day for the rest of my life. Maybe not, but This is not one that's like,
no, it's not something I would watch.
It's not like
often.
My favorite movie, but it's definitely like a fun one to watch with your girlfriends.
Yeah.
So while drinking wine or martinis.
Yep. Aviation gin martinis.
Yeah.
So I do have some questions for you.
Oh, she's married to Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
I just got that. I'm an idiot.
Okay. Anyway. I don't know what to say about that.
Don't worry about it. Did you know my son says to me now, don't worry about it. It's like, you're not allowed to say that to me. That's my line.
When he starts saying, here's the thing, then not you'll yet. Know that you have become, that he has become you.
He put his rain boots on the wrong feet the other day. And I was like, baby, you have your boots on the wrong feet. And he literally said, don't worry about it. Okay.
Don't worry about it, mom.
Yeah. If he does go, sure.
That's anyway, cute.
Yeah.
Okay. Questions. Can you relate to either of these women? You can go both based off a book, movie. I don't care.
No.
Okay.
Do you want me to give a reason?
Yeah.
I think that they're both caricatures on the opposite ends of a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
In their, like, public life, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a reason to, like, obsess over my kid and make everything homemade and do all that shit. You know, If you don't have to, why stress yourself out? And I honestly don't give a crap if anybody judges my parenting. I think Stephanie cares a lot.
Yeah.
But I also would never sacrifice time with my kid for an over-the-top home or an over-the-top wardrobe or any of that shit that they have. Right. I just wouldn't do it. It wouldn't ever get to that point.
That's why she's doing the scheme.
Huh?
She's doing this insurance fraud thing so she gets more time with her kid.
Right. But she could have had more time with her kid years ago because you don't have to live that opulent of a life. But she needs to have it all because she's a psychopath.
She needs the thrill.
Yeah, she needs that. So do you?
I did a little bit like in the very beginning of the book when Stephanie's talking about like being a stay-at-home mom and not really having any friends and that kind of stuff. Like I felt that. I don't have a lot of friends.
Like missing the interaction.
Right. Yeah. And so I kind of related to that, and I got where she was talking about people often pit working moms with stay-at-home moms. And
do you
I
think people do that, or do you think we do it to ourselves?
That's what I was gonna ask. Like, I don't know that people do that. I think sometimes when we're out or if I meet new people, they're like, oh, what do you do? And I say, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And they're like, oh, And like, that's the end of it. Where when I had a job, people have questions and that kind of stuff, where I feel like maybe I'm a little more one dimensional to them now because I just stay home.
And get shit under your fingernails.
I'm saying I
keep a human alive.
I think people are like, oh, you just stay home. And
yeah,
like there's a lot more to it than that. I don't make her food or anything. But
you mean you don't like grow it organically in your backyard? Okay. You make her food. She's eaten today, right?
Yes. Okay. I make her food. I don't organically, like, I didn't make her baby food. Like,
right.
I didn't puree it myself.
Yeah. I was obsessed about that kind of shit when I first had Ethan. Like, okay, everything had to be organic. Nothing could have a chemical on it. And I was stressed the fuck out. And it's now... But I mean, that was when he was a baby. So, you know, it's scarier when you have a little baby. Now he's almost 5 and I don't give a fuck.
And today you fed him Cool Ranch Dorito. Just kidding.
Have some MSG, son.
Yes.
No, we had pizza from Domino's.
I just feel like sometimes there's like an instant. I don't even know that it's a negative judgment. I just feel like there's an instant slight judgment placed on me. Like, you assume you know who I am because of this.
Question: do you think that's yourself projecting onto them, or do you think that's the actual vibe? And
like
vibe?
I said, I don't think it's negative. I just okay. think it's there. Where, I don't know.
It'd be interesting to really be able to tell a stranger's thoughts, wouldn't it?
It would be really interesting.
Yeah. And I've had people be a little judgy about the fact that, you know, I've been working since 100%. Ethan was...
There's no winning, and no matter what it is, you're doing the wrong thing.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is, like, I'm glad I have a job now and everything. It was hard when he was first born, but, like, I think guilt is a really shitty thing.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what we do, we're going to have it, even if we raised our kids perfectly, because we're parents, you know.
Right. There's nothing you can do to be the perfect parent. And I think no matter what you choose, working mom or stay-at-home mom, it's a hard job and you're doing the best you can.
Yes.
And I think maybe some... I think, like, when I get it from other people, it's either, like, men... or people who don't have kids.
Oh, fuck them.
And do you know what I mean, though?
Like, I do know exactly what you're talking about.
Ew. Yeah. Anyway, so at the beginning of the book, I kind of understood what she was saying about that and why she started her blog to connect with other people, because it's also hard to meet people when you do stay home, because there's not a ton of other moms that stay home with kids the same age.
Yeah. That's the other thing too, is like, that's part of the reason we started a podcast, was so that we would have something other than work and motherhood and life that was just for fun, just for us.
Yes, which I love.
Me too. So I do get the whole blog thing. That does make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My next question, is there any casting you would have changed?
No.
Okay.
Would you?
No, I think it's perfectly cast.
I loved it.
Me too, even though it wasn't age appropriate. Not age appropriate. I mean, it wasn't cast the same as the book.
Well, I know Anna Kendrick's in her... She's like slightly older than us. She's in her mid-30s.
Well, I feel old.
I know.
Is she? How old is she?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure she's slightly older than us. Crap. Blake Lively, I don't know. You know what I love about Blake Lively? Is that she has lines in her face.
She just, her and, no, she's the same age as us. She was born in 85.
Oh, okay.
Anna Kendrick. I just feel like Blake Lively's so real, and I love how she roasts her husband online. It's great.
Oh, that's pretty awesome.
Blake Lively was born in 87.
Okay. Still younger. It's still too young, but.
Right. Yeah. Okay, my next question. Did you miss anything from the book that wasn't in the movie?
Nope. Did you?
Nope.
I'm glad it was totally different. Let me clarify. It was a well-written book. It was not a bad book. I just personally didn't like it. So that's what I have to say about that.
Okay. My last question, which you already kind of answered, was did you like the blog posts?
No.
Okay.
Did you?
No, but you do like the vlog.
I loved the vlog. And I liked watching the comments that people were putting up.
I did too. And I loved how on the side, like one would be like, my friend is missing right below it. 10-minute brownies.
Uh-huh.
I was like, yep, those are the important things.
Did you watch the counter tally up too?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it started at like 400 and something. And by the end of the movie, she had 110,000 subscribers or something like that.
They did such an amazing job, like, recreating that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
It was perfect for the movie.
It was perfect for the movie.
Yeah. I was wondering how they were going to translate the blog, and I was like, duh, that totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not creative. I would not have thought of that.
It was really great.
Yeah. And the writing was amazing. Those jokes were I'm never going to get over cesarean salad. Ever. Especially coming out of a 5-year-old's mouth.
Like every time you have it now, you're going to be like, I'll have the cesarean salad.
Oh, and that scene with the closet where she's emptying out all of Emily's clothes and then she turns around and all the clothes are back in the closet.
Can it's someone so tell cool. me how to move clothes and organize a closet that quickly?
I know.
I would appreciate it.
Magic and witchcraft.
It's great.
It's really awesome. Oh, we didn't say spoilers at the beginning of this, did we?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good.
The other, like, another part of the movie I loved is when she has to cut off that dress after the police interview her.
She was so uncomfortable the entire time she was sitting there. I was like, you're illustrating what my life is like right now.
The way she's, like, trying to adjust that dress, and I'm like, oh. We've all been there.
I mean, literally, could you imagine a more uncomfortable scenario? You're trying on your dead friend's clothes.
Ooh. In her house.
In her house. And it's like, it's even worse because it's not like a sweater. Like you could be like, oh, I miss her. So I wanted, it's a sexy dress. It's amazing. And the way Anna Kendrick does her physical comedy, the way she does her...
Yeah.
Her, like, gesticulating and everything she does is just great. She has amazing timing.
It's really, really good.
She's incredible.
Okay.
Brotherfucker.
Those are the only questions. I love when she's running it out of the house. Brotherfucker! Like, it's so funny.
It is.
I'll never get over it.
No.
Blake Lively, props to you on this movie.
Yeah, it was a really good choice. I did not know what a good actor she was.
I haven't watched her in a ton of things, so I loved it.
I did too.
All right, that's all I have for this.
Me too.
So throughout the book, I don't actually know how I feel about the book. Like, I don't like it, but I don't think I hate it. I'm kind of in the middle ground.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the themes of guilt, trust, betrayal, friendship, motherhood. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like this book probably resonates more with women. On the other hand, I absolutely love this movie. It's so dark and funny. Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively are both absolutely amazing in it. The costumes are phenomenal. The dialogue is great. And Stephanie is actually a redeemable person that I could like.
Yes.
One thing that I thought was good, they originally have a big like flash mob dance scene at the end. It's in the deleted scenes and Sean proposes to Stephanie. And I guess it didn't test well with audiences. So I really like that they cut that and Sean's like off doing his own thing. Stephanie's thriving on her own.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a good call.
Yeah.
I'm very happy she did not end up with Sean.
Yeah, plus, you know, you don't need a flash mob dance scene when you just had a beautiful woman get hit by a Prius.
You know, an amazing dress.
That's enough. But it was just enough.
My personal opinion for this would be you could probably skip the book, but definitely see the movie.
I agree. I love that the movie doesn't take itself too seriously, where the book totally does. Like you said, Stephanie was more likable. I liked all the changes that were made in the movie. I felt like they were an improvement on the book and were in line with the overall feel of the movie. I didn't hate the book, but I hated the characters, which I think you're probably supposed to. I also didn't feel like there was any actual tension in the book, if that makes sense. Or maybe it was just because I didn't really care enough about the characters to care what happened to them.
I don't know if I think there's tension. There were definitely twists. Like, I didn't see some of it.
When I think about tension, I think about something like the other Boleyn girl had a lot of tension because I wanted to find out what happened next. Whereas with this book, I didn't care. And with the other Boleyn girl, for the most part, I knew what happened next. But I cared about the characters so much and I loved it so much that I just wanted to keep going. Mm-hmm. There was enough.
Which is crazy because this book is less than half of that book.
Isn't that nuts?
Lengthwise?
Yeah, I had to really like pound this one out because I started reading it. I got 40 pages in and then put it down for an entire week because I didn't want to read it.
Ouch.
I'm so sorry.
You should have watched the movie first.
Maybe I should have.
Then you would have been like, yes, let's do this book. And then you would have been disappointed.
Yeah, I was still disappointed, but that's fine. I was excited for this book, but yeah, it's not my cup of tea.
Okay.
Loved the movie, though. Great. Skip the book, watch the movie.
I second that. Please join us next Monday for our episode of Lit Bits, where we'll talk about the other things we've read and watched, along with any current events from the literary or film world. If you're reading along with us, our next book is Mortal Engines by Philip Reeve, and the movie is directed by Peter Jackson. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on our website at thelitflixpodcast.com. That's the LITFLIX podcast.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Please rate, review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Cheers.
I'm Elisa Lucas from Best Forevers, a podcast for kindred spirits. I'd like to start a movement where we spend more time loving on our friends because although friends are important to us, they're often in the shadow of other relationships. So if you want to love on your friendships a little bit more, embrace friendship a little bit more, or just appreciate your friendships a little bit more, then this podcast is for you. We'll explore all the different ways friendships take place, share the amazing stories of friendship, and discuss best practices for the difficulties that friends may experience. It's time to embrace friendships because without our friends, who would we be? So check out Best Forevers on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the other podcasting listening venues. And be sure to follow Best Forevers Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.